And it's Ari Rosenbaum here with another fun-filled episode of the 401k Podcast. This week we're going to talk about the problems and perils in a plan sponsor changing their 401k TPA. A very timely subject for me right now, as I will discuss in this episode, some of the issues that I'm going on as we speak with a current TPA and some of the problems that ensues and some interesting facts that I think would shock anybody who's a reasonable person in this retirement plan industry. But of course, first things first, that 401k National Virtual Conference is in the history books, as they say. Great event. I really enjoyed it. I will say that even though last year's in-person event in Disney World was quite memorable for a lot of reasons, I actually enjoyed the virtual conference better. I had a better attendance. Walt Frazier was great. Dwight Gooden. It was great to have all this filmed and available now on YouTube. Eventually we'll allow the entire conference to be available on YouTube, but I wanted to give some exclusivity to the people that paid $20-something, $30-something to attend the event. Interviewing Walt Frazier was great, Dwight Gooden, Retireholics were fantastic, a lot of good presentations, a lot of good questions, and, you know, I did have such a fun time doing it and setting it up, and it was a lot easier than the in-person Disney event, that's why next year's National Conference will again be virtual. It'll be I think January 28th. 27th, 28th, that was like a Thursday, Friday, 2022. Link is going to be up soon to purchase tickets. Again, we're going to offer the $20.22 early bird. And I like the format. I think, a big part of my belief about post-COVID is that I believe that travel is going to get cut back for these big national events. I think that, quite honestly, if you're not FI360, if you're not NAPA, if you're not those, was Advisors 2X now, I think that's their name now, if you're not one of those groups, I think that you're going to have a tough time getting people to go. I think that thanks to COVID, I think travel's still going to be down for these big national events. I'm going to still continue the local events. Hopefully we could be in Minnesota in June. I know, but for certain we will be in Vegas in December. But my belief is that these big national events, there's going to be a cutback. It's going to be cutback in spending, not only by the providers, as I've seen over the last year, but I also think that, again, firms are going to cut back on travel. They realize that, you know, people out of the office, it costs money. Let them be in the office. And that's the beauty of this virtual event, the two-day event. You leave, you miss a thing. Well, you know, Zoom allows you to record in the cloud. You have the opportunity to watch back and see stuff at your own pace. If you miss something, you went to the restroom or whatever it may be, at least it's there for you. And again, I think it's more cost-effective rather than asking these great attendees for all these events and have them spend $1,000 or $2,000 for the airfare, the hotel, and all that. Let them work from home, see videos, or at work, see videos at their own pleasure. And, you know, again, I think it's more cost-effective, and that's what we're going to do next year. Setting up a live conference, dealing with a hotel and all that stuff. The Disney event went off well, despite the fact that a pandemic was starting and half the attendees canceled last minute. It just, outside of that, it still was a very difficult event to achieve and succeed at. So therefore, I think it's better to do this virtual event. We're going to make some changes. Obviously, I'm my own worst critic. I see what works and what doesn't, and there are a couple things that I want to fine-tune for this event and do a better job in promoting it for next year. So go to that 401ksite.com. I think the page is actually up. We're still in the midst of changing it. If you didn't want to sign up for $20.22, feel free. It's a year away. And of course, like I said, hopefully June the 11th will be in Minneapolis. I can't guarantee that. You know, obviously this vaccine thing is not going as well as we had hoped. But I certainly know that in the fall, We should be having events, certainly Las Vegas. We'll look to other events. We may do one in New York. There is one famous venue. Well, there's two famous venues that I've not had an event at, and there's one that I certainly would be interested in hosting an event, and we'll see what happens. Knowing this venue, I probably have to book something in November and not October. But of course, I think that kind of tipped my hand as to where's that venue, I think, that we're missing of having that 401k conference in New York. But anyway, a great topic right now for me, very, very timely. The problems and troubles in changing a 401k TPA, it's not fun. I don't enjoy it. It's like, to me, changing TPAs is like moving your house. I've had the luxury of, you know, outside of school, we don't count school, but outside of school, I've only lived in four places in my life. So 48 years, four places, one of which was an apartment that I only stayed 2 years at when I was first married. And when I was first born, 2 years in an apartment that I don't recall. So I've only really been in a handful of situations. Actually, I think if I count, I'm sorry, I've lived in five places. Yeah, five places, I'm sorry. I forgot my parents' house for a time after I graduated school. But I don't like moving. I find it traumatic. We're thinking, you know, when my kids graduate high school in about 3 to 4 years, you know, we're probably going to sell this house and move somewhere else, probably to a lower tax state, probably. And I'm already dreading moving. I'm already starting to get rid of stuff. And I'm not going to be moving for probably another 3.5 years. I feel the same way about changing TPAs. I don't want to change TPAs. I don't like it. It's not fun. It's not a fun process. There are a lot of hiccups that go along the way. And right now, I'm working on a map, $115 million map that's changing TPAs. And we'll talk about, you know, why this is such a terrible process. Number one, you know, one of the problems, obviously, is it's not fun. And I think it really should only be done when it's necessary. I think it should be only done when you're making it, when you're making the change for the right reasons. You know, if the current TPA is offering a poor service, if they're too expensive, you know, maybe the new TPA is less expensive, maybe they have a better website, a better experience for plan participants. You know, but, you know, I spent 9 years, almost 10 years working for TPAs, and there were people who would change TPAs because their new broker, their new advisor said, you know what, I want you to move the plan to this TPA that I like. Many years ago, I always joke about that law firm plan where I worked at the law firm, and, you know, the HR director didn't listen to a thing I said and picked the advisor that they wanted, and the advisor... we were using some platform, a TPA that I've never heard of before and never heard of since. I think they do a lot of union plans, but they were using that old Relias website. Remember those? I don't know if anybody remembers. You can determine when a website was run by Relias. It had that kind of interface. So the advisor took over the plan and said, "Oh, you know, I don't think we should change TPAs for the sake of changing TPAs." And then, of course, she moved the plan to the TPA that, you know, she wanted, which was an insurance-based platform, which I don't think made sense to me on a plan that had $25 million more. That was my sense at the time. Of course, I was never notified of the change and whatever. And it was clearly because the advisor wanted to work with that TPA for some reason. And we would have it where, you know, we working for a TPA, you build a relationship with the advisor, and all of a sudden, you know, 7-8 plans go with the advisor to the new TPA. I don't think that that's the right choice. The changes for a TPA should be for the benefit of the plan sponsor and the plan participants. It not should not be benefit for another plan provider. It should be done for the benefit of plan participants. Now, when I work for a TPA and they switch platforms to please a platform provider that the TPA wasn't bringing that much business over the past to maintain pricing, you know, that was a change that didn't really help me out. I use that as an example. It's a difficult and treacherous process that takes a lot of time and focus. So it's got to be done for the right reasons. Of course, contracts should be reviewed by the arrest attorney, both the former TPA and the new TPA. I see a lot of corporate attorneys being used, but that's not their focus. They don't understand the risk issues that I think that most risk attorneys have certainly brushed up on. I think that when you are working with an attorney, when it comes to ERISA, use an ERISA attorney. It's important for the plan sponsor to identify the deconversion process, especially the cost. The old TPA will charge you for switching to a new TPA. I don't like it. This isn't. I don't like the deconversion fee. A client fires me as a risk attorney, hires somebody else. I don't charge a fee. I think that should be part of the overall fee. But that's a debate for another time. But understand that almost all TPAs charge a deconversion fee. It's important to identify that it's disclosed somewhere in the contract, and that's one of the problems that I have with this current TPA on this $115 million map, where the language in the contract is vague as to the cost, and it's got to be agreed by the plan sponsor and the TPA, and we're not agreeing to what the TPA charges. But it's important to know before you go what the cost is, and of course now, unfortunately, I know what the cost is. Identify any surrender charge, or actually, let's go back to the deconversion cost. So again, let's go back to this MEP situation that I have. I have a contract with a TPA. I pay for annual administration. I'm paying the TPA until 2/22/2021. I paid for the entire 2020 plan year. The TPA says that that doesn't include the $5,500 in the valuation from that year. I say that it does. Most TPAs that I've talked to agree with me. Even if we agree with the incumbent TPA that they are entitled to a fee for the $5,500 in the valuation, the current TPA is charging, wants to charge over $55,000 for the valuation and the $5,500, which is almost half the annual fee charged to the plan for the entire administration for the year. Looking at the new TPA is willing to do all the deconversion work and the $5,500 in valuation work from scratch, and will charge less than the incumbent TPA. Of course, now the incumbent TPA is holding the 2019 valuation as hostage, and that's a problem. And it's a huge problem. And I've gone to the Department of Labor over this. I will certainly keep you guys up to date about what's going on. But, it's amazing what, 99% of TPAs would not do this. And they would understand that there's got to be a meeting of the minds. And it's the first time I ever dealt with a TPA that wasn't willing to back off on their price. So, again, understand the cost of the deconversion process. And there should be no cost, in my opinion, for additional work that has already been paid. Next, talking about hidden charges, make sure that, the plan sponsor needs to make sure that there's any, identify any surrender charges or market value adjustments. Insurance companies have contracts, they could be 5 to 7 years. There may be a surrender charge or some sort of exit fee, for a plan sponsor that terminates, the TPA, the bundled provider, earlier than usual. Same thing with market value adjustments, dealing with stable value products. If you're changing, the plan sponsor's changing, stable value investment. They're going from, one good company to whatever their current insurance provider is pushing. or current providers pushing, identify if there are any surrender charges or actually market value adjustments. And in certain environments, I've seen huge market value adjustments equaling, 3%. If there is a market value adjustment, there are ways around it. Keeping the stable value investment at the new provider or whatever that may be. But, it's important to understand and identify any potential hiccups that will inflict unnecessary costs on plan participants. Next on my list is I think that the plan sponsor has a duty to understand and try to find out how long the conversion process will take. Sometimes the blackout period is longer than we want it to be. Setups and whatnot. I've been in situations where the process should have been a month, and unfortunately, for one reason or another, it's increased over time. Of course, it's important when dealing with a new TPA that the plan sponsor identifies and makes sure who they're dealing with at the new TPA. TPA salespeople are great people. Rich Lorita was one of the greatest people I knew at CBIZ, at Gela Group. Some of my most important relationships in this business with Larry Davis, Bill Shorey's, the FPS Trust guys, a lot of the Matrix folks. These are people that I met through Rich Lorita. But when Rich sold a plan, he left at a certain point to sell other plans. And then, the administrator would be connected to the plan sponsor, and the plan sponsor would know this is the one person you're dealing with. And Rich will always be there if you got complaints, and Rich would put a poker up people's rear ends when they screwed up. But the TPA salesperson is only part of the equation. There's a time when they're going to leave, and there's going to be time where you're going to be handed off to somebody or a team, depending on the provider. So I think that's important. Next, make sure you get off on the right foot with the new TPA. I believe that, first impressions mean the most. I always jokingly say, I luckily overcame that with my mother-in-law. I met my mother-in-law for the first time very awkwardly at the Nanuet Mall, which doesn't exist anymore. It's now like an open-air mall in Nanuet, New York. We met each other at the food court. She was sitting next to me, so I wasn't giving her eye contact because it's hard to, when you're sitting in one of those food court places, it was not a good first impression. Thankfully, I overcame that. And a lot of times in life, I've realized, first impressions do mean the most, and there's certain first impressions that I just can't get over. And some I do, and some I don't. But I think it's important with a TPA, you get off on the right foot, because I've seen when the conversion process doesn't get on the right foot with a TPA, it never gets any better. The new TPA, it's always awkward. It's bobbling around. It's not a good process. Talking about the TPA world, talking about Advisors brought us business. It was an architectural firm in Tennessee. The HR director didn't want to make the change, which was one strike against us. The previous TPA did a lot of her work for her in running the plan, and we weren't going to provide the work. There were hiccups along the way. And ultimately, not only did we get fired as a TPA, the advisor did as well, because we screwed up the administration and we were obviously not satisfying her. And that's a problem. It's important to get on the right foot with the new TPA. There's nothing worse than when you just bobble it, because like I said, you bobble it, it's very hard to recover. Like I said, luckily I did with my mother-in-law. Some other people in the past, I think with Lois, who was the managing attorney at my old firm, I guess I got off the right foot. I did not get off the right foot with her, and it never got any better. Next, plan sponsor shouldn't be passive aggressive. And passive aggressive, that was a behavior of mine when I was younger. I would be passive aggressive behavior to me is when you're stewing about something, you don't let people know about it, and you would just blow up at a certain point. I think it's important to be honest with people. If you're not satisfied with something, let them know. And that's how I am now as an adult. When I was a kid, or even when I was in my 20s, if I was unhappy about something, people aren't mind readers. You know, you could have angry faces and you know, blow air out, but they need to know when you're upset, when you're not, you know. And with a plant sponsor is really unhappy with a TPA, they are not mind readers. TPAs have hundreds and hundreds of clients. They don't have time to read your mind. You know, it's important for the plant sponsor to let them know exactly what's going on, what's the problems. I'm not happy here, instead of the usual blow up at the end when, you know, when there's a change. So going back to my situation with that MEP, we did tell the TPA the poor service and issues for long, and TPA ignored it. And when we said we're firing them, that was a problem. That was a big issue. So that was certainly a problem. Next and last, plant sponsors need to understand that the conversion process is interesting, because that's one of the places where the new TPA may find problems that the old TPA created and ignored. I love the movie Casino. And there's that scene where Lefty is a real person. Sam A. Strothstein meets Anthony, played by Joe Pesci. It was Tony the Ant Spilotro, but I forgot the guy's name in the movie because they changed the movie. But anyway, there's a scene where they're meeting in the desert, and Sam A. Strothstein talks about the holes in the desert, and these were where some of the grievances are buried, which means that there are a lot of holes in the desert with dead bodies in there. That's where grudges or fights are handled. So I joke when dealing with plan errors, sometimes they're, you know, dropped into a hole and buried. Sometimes the TPA doesn't know that they cause these mistakes. Most TPAs, when they catch a mistake, they'll correct their own error. But the conversion process, unfortunately, a lot of times is the time when, you know, hey, plant sponsor, you won a prize. And that prize is going to the VCP because you did your top-heavy test incorrectly, and you're top-heavy, and you got to make a corrective contribution. Or, look, you won a prize. You got to restate your plan document. You missed a restatement or two along the way. It's a game, you know. You play the game, and sometimes, unfortunately, when you make the conversion change for a plan sponsor, this is when you know that, you know, this error that's a big problem in your plan pops up and is discovered. So anyway. That's my episode of that 401k podcast, and hope you guys go to that 401ksite.com for further information. Probably in March we're going to start again the 401k virtual bunches and whatnot, and the small virtual conferences. February's kind of open. Got some issues that I have to take care of in February, so that's why I'm not going to schedule in February and move to March. And hopefully in that interim, build more interest in that 401k National Virtual Conference for 2022. And hopefully we can set some dates as to where we will be for the rest of the year in 2022. So it's Ari Rosenbaum with another episode of that 401k podcast. I hope that you guys come back next week, and thank you for all your listening. Thanks. Take care. Bye.